Blog Talk Radio.
Talking political news, cultural topics, and a little witchy stuff, too. This is Conservative Cauldron Radio with your host, Becky Noble. And now, here's your conservative Wiccan, Becky Noble.
You are correct. Your weekly dose of conservative wickedness. Good Friday morning, everyone. We are back live, new and improved, and better than ever. Okay, not all of that. Well, yeah, all of that. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everyone, for hanging out with me on this fabulous Friday, TGIF. It's been a little boiling here in St. Louis. Hope it's nice and cool wherever you are. But, whoo, honey, it has been toasty here. But we've got a lot to cover, as always, today. We've got a lot to get into. Of course, we have convention news from both the Republican and Democrat conventions. We've got poll numbers. We've got, oh, my God, we've got all kinds of things. But one of the reasons that I was not, oh, and we may have a little bit of witchy info, a little bit of witchy information towards the end of the program today. So there's all that. But the reason that we were not live last week is because I was in Cleveland at the Republican National Convention. And what may seem like old news by now, not only that, since it's been a week, plus all of the attention has been this week on the Democrats, I just kind of wanted to maybe relay a few of my experiences and a few of my thoughts and impressions about what I saw and heard there, and kind of contrast that a little bit to what we saw and heard this week from the Democrats. I was not a delegate. I have several friends that were, in fact, delegates. I was with a good friend of mine. Her name is Julie Prince. She writes for PJ Media. Please go to PJ Media and check out all of the great stuff that she writes. There's a shameless plug for my good friend Jules. But she did a lot of work on Ted Cruz's campaign up in Ohio. And so she was able to get us some passes for both Tuesday night and Wednesday night to the convention. And of course you can't sit down on the floor with the delegates. You have to kind of sit up in the nosebleed section. So that's what we did. Different experience actually watching it live from what you see on TV. What I came away with kind of first of all, just as a general impression, was that you really kind of miss a lot when you're actually there live. And that might sound kind of weird, but you do actually get, you do kind of see a little bit more of actually what's going on, especially if you're, you know, sitting up high and you really can't see up close on the floor with the delegates what's going on. But aside from that, regardless of that, it was an amazing experience. I would encourage anybody who, if you ever have the chance to go through the process and become a delegate, I did it myself, did not get picked, of course, but just the process of going through, you know, attempting to be picked, to be a delegate, it's an interesting process. We saw, you know, we met people from all over the country, all over the nation, all there to pick a presidential nominee. And really it was kind of both at this point, both sides, you know, everybody had a presumptive nominee here, love him or hate him. We attended the convention on Tuesday night when Texas Senator Ted Cruz made his speech. It was a good speech. He, again, love him or hate him, Ted Cruz is a patriot. Ted Cruz is a man who loves his country. And that was very evident by the speech that he gave. there's a lot of disagreement on whether or not he should have endorsed Donald Trump. A lot of people say that they think he was kind of being a sore loser, that it was kind of a case of sour grapes, that maybe he should have gone ahead and endorsed him for, if nothing else, maybe for some minute bit of party unity. There are others who say absolutely not. He did the right thing. He stood up for his principles and his convictions, and his principles and convictions told him in no way could he endorse Donald Trump. Whatever side of the fence you fall on, you know, that's kind of what America's about. You have your own opinion and you state that opinion, and people can't agree or disagree with you or debate you or what have you. But we did kind of see, like I said, we were sitting up high, so it was kind of hard to see. But we did kind of see when it became apparent that Ted Cruz was not going to endorse Donald Trump, you could see a lot of rumblings going on the floor. And it was kind of, from where we were sitting, it was kind of like, well, something's going on, but we're not quite sure what. And excuse me. There was a lot of, you know, what might have sounded like cheers, not really cheers, not really boos, but just kind of a general rumbling and kind of neither one. It wasn't one, either one. It wasn't cheering. It wasn't booing. The Texas delegation, to my understanding, was that the Texas delegation was pretty upset with Ted Cruz. Many of them said that went on to say the next day that should Ted Cruz decide in 2020 to again run, that they could not support him because of his what they felt was some bad behavior that night. Others were saying that not only did they not know whether or not they could support him in another presidential run in a possible presidential run in 2020, but they weren't even sure that they could endorse him for reelection to the Senate in 2018. So there was a lot of strong feeling from a lot of people, and a lot of those people being from the Texas delegation, there was a lot of strong feeling from the Missouri delegation. And so that was an interesting thing to see. Another thing that we got to witness was the roll call of the states when they come forward and pledge their delegates to the nominee. And that was a pretty interesting thing to see, was interesting. One of the things I think, well, several things that we saw last week was patriotism. Patriotism on display. You saw a lot of veterans. You saw, it kind of surprised me, I saw a lot of people with young children. And at first thought, you might not think that it's a convention, a political convention like that is not something maybe that you would bring young children to, but actually, you know, kind of armchair quarterbacking it and thinking about it later on, actually it really is a good idea because you are exposing children, you know, and I'm not talking about babies or toddlers or little kids like that. I'm talking maybe grade school age as soon as, and everyone's child is different, but as soon as they would be old enough to comprehend and to understand, possibly with a little bit of explanation from parents and adults, what exactly was taking place and what exactly was going on, it probably really is a good idea for them to see the process taking place in person, because I think we all know, given the state of the American educational system, that there's probably not a lot of that goes on. And for all of the people who are trying to put forth the notion that the Republican convention was just a you know, just a mess, and that chaos just ensued, and that there was no party unity, and that it was just this giant cluster mess. I did not see that. I did not see it. I don't think that my friends who were delegates witnessed anything like that. Yeah, there's a little bit of disagreement. There's a little bit of disagreement on who should be the nominee. And a lot of those people were very vocal about that. And they have the right to be vocal and to state their opinion and say what they think about it. I saw a lot less unity and a lot more chaos this week in Philadelphia at the Democrat convention. You had Bernie Sanders supporters who, you know, their whole week started off not in a good place. You had the leaked emails from the DNC between DNC chairman, former Democrat National Committee chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and other DNC operatives, basically talking about how they were going to screw Bernie out of any possible nomination. And Bernie Sanders people were hot about this. They were ticked off. They were ticked off all week long about it, and they had every right to be. And a lot of people compared what happened with Bernie Sanders with Ted Cruz standing up for his convictions and beliefs. I don't know. I don't know that it's the same thing, that it falls in the same category, because the difference is that the Republicans started out with 17 candidates. We started out with 17 people vying for this nomination, and one by one, they all dropped out. But there was none of them at any time who absolutely never had a chance from the get-go. There was none of them who at any time at the beginning of the process that the deck was stacked against them, that the system was rigged in the way that it was on the Democrat side. Because if for anybody who knows anything about it, you know how the Democrats have the whole superdelegate system and that whole thing. And that's basically how they rig the nomination. Those superdelegates are there to ensure basically that the Democrat Party gets the nominee that they want, not necessarily who the people are voting for and who the people want. And I'm not sure, given the position that Hillary Clinton was in at the beginning of this process, I keep asking myself, and I've asked a lot of other people, how did you not know that this system was going to be rigged in favor of Hillary Clinton? How did Bernie Sanders himself not know that this process was going to be rigged in favor of Hillary Clinton? But the Bernie people made themselves known all week long. They shouted and they screamed and they protested. And there was a lot of things that were done against them. There were several reports of DNC officials were trying to lock them out of their own convention. That in many ways that they were attempting to silence them. And, you know, Bernie, to his credit, I think, was trying to bring those people on board with Hillary and kind of doing what we've been doing here on the Republican side, saying, look, this is the deck that we've been dealt, and we have to deal with it as best we can. You are free to sit this one out. You're free to not vote. You're free to vote for a third party candidate. That's how it works. God bless America. But, you know, we saw so many other things. Well, first of all, what we didn't see was American flags on stage at the DNC, and that was until there was a lot of uproar on social media about it. We saw the mothers of young black men who were killed by police officers, but yet we didn't see any widows of the five police officers who were shot in Dallas. We didn't see any military widows. We didn't see anything like that. There was a sharp contrast between the week of the Republican convention and just this past week. And I think that it was very apparent. You didn't have to look far to be hit in the face with the contrast. And that contrast also means that Americans have a very, very stark choice come November for who to vote for. I'm going to take a quick break here. I'm going to come back. We will talk more about this. Plus, we've got a ton more stuff to get to. I'm just getting started. Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. I'll be right back.
Conservative Cauldron Radio.
The following message is brought to you by Health Markets, your first choice when you need health insurance for your small business. Do you offer health insurance to your employees? Call us now and see if you can save money. Do you want to offer vision and dental to your employees? Call us. Do you think you're paying too much for your current health insurance? Call us. Do you want somebody else to do all the legwork and search thousands of health plans from over 180 health insurance companies nationwide? Call us. We're Health Markets, and thanks to a little-known solution, we could help your business save thousands of dollars on health insurance costs and save your employees money, too. Our service is free. Don't miss the great savings. Call now.
800-470-8021. 800-470-8021. 800-470-8021. That's 800-470-8021.
Health Markets Insurance Agency is DBA of InSphere Insurance Solutions, Inc. Licensed in all states. Product availability varies.
Are you getting squeezed by the economic downturn? Hey, you were doing fine. Then, all of a sudden, you're having a tough time paying your family's credit card bills. Maybe you were downsized or even lost a job, but you still owe 10 grand or more in credit card bills, and you just can't afford the minimum payments anymore. We're here to help. We are the Genesis Debt Partners. We know the secrets to negotiate better terms with your creditors. Make a free 10-minute call right now and learn how we can help you get out of debt. 800-807-9767. If you owe 10 grand or more in credit card debt and you want to learn how you can pay less and get out of debt faster, call right now. 800-807-9767. 800-807-9767. Get out of debt now. 800-807-9767.
All right, guys. We're ready for our four-season sunroom, and Daddy's going to get a rec room with refreshments.
Oh, no. We'll be sleeping under the stars.
Mom, what about the one with, you know, the fun?
Nice try, little bro. It's a gym. My gym.
Hey, Grandma's getting her Four Seasons garden room. Weather tight and still like being outdoors.
Maybe a living room. Oh, no, wait. A family hub.
Yeah!
No matter what the budget, the season, or the climate, Four Seasons sunrooms let you and your family enjoy the outdoors inside. Call now to hear more about these great offers from the premier manufacturer of sunrooms since 1975. To find out more, call toll-free 800-962-9119. That's 800-962-9119. Call 800-962-9119 today.
Is debt beating you down? You need discipline. You need
the Debt Ninja.
If you've been caught in a financial trap and need to be set free, then you need
the Debt Ninja.
Want to stop those harassing collection calls, start saving thousands in interest and fees, and get out of debt fast? Then you need to call
the Debt Ninja.
The Debt Ninja will find the best companies across the country that will help you consolidate all your bills into one easy payment, reduce your payments by 30 to 50%, and get you out of debt fast. If you have unsecured debt of $10,000 or more, such as credit cards, loans, or medical bills, call
the Debt Ninja
for a free 15-minute consultation.
Call 800-824-3301. 800-824-3301. That's 800-824-3301. Call today.
The Debt Ninja.
We are back. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble, TGIF people. The weekend is upon us. Hope the weather is nice and sunny and maybe not quite so toasty as it is here, wherever you are. I would be remiss if I did not mention that you can call in here and talk about whatever I'm talking about with me here. The number is 347-857-2620, 347-857-2620. And, of course, the chat room is open for your convenience. And, you know, we've been talking about the contrast of the Democrat and the Republican conventions. I was in fact in Cleveland at the Republican National Convention, but as I was saying before the break, that the Democrats kind of started out on a bad note with the whole email thing and the discovery of emails between now former DNC chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz and other DNC operatives. And again, my question was that, you know, how did Bernie Sanders, first of all, how did Bernie Sanders not know that this system was going to be rigged in favor of Hillary Clinton? How did Bernie Sanders supporters not know that this system was going to be rigged in favor of Hillary Clinton? Because here's the thing, and we can go back to the beginning. Bernie Sanders and his supporters and his movement, let's face it, he did start a movement. None of that was supposed to happen. Bernie Sanders was put up there so that it would look as though that Hillary Clinton had some sort of competition, but the plan was supposed to be that she was supposed to just slide right through primary season, take all 50 states and then some, you know, maybe invent 7 more states. What was it that Barack Obama said once, 57 states, and just breeze right on through to the nomination. And that didn't happen. And we also know that if the whole superdelegate process were not in place, the primary results would have been much, much closer than they were. And when the earlier this week, when the whole email scandal came to light, most of the head honchos, the big cheese in the DNC, were trying to say that nobody knew about these emails. Well, that's impossible. There's no way that they didn't know about them. And the word from I have a report here. This is from Reuters. This is from last Monday. This is from Monday of this week. That you know, these emails went on to say that they were going to mock Bernie Sanders' religion. Bernie Sanders is Jewish. This is the big tent party. This is the people who say that they're all inclusive and all acceptive, and can't we just get along and everybody has coexist bumper stickers on their cars. This is the party that was going to make fun of Bernie Sanders for the fact that he's Jewish, and which is interesting because a lot of liberals, there are a lot of liberal Democrats in places where there are heavy Jewish populations like New York that do vote heavily Democrat. And so the fact that that was in the plan is kind of mind boggling to me. But the Julian Assange, who is the founder and runs the WikiLeaks website, he has also come out and said that, he's not done yet. There's more to come. I saw a report earlier this week where he said that he had some voicemails that he was going to release. You know, don't make no mistake about it. Julian Assange is a big liberal. He's an uber lib, but he is no fan of Hillary Clinton. And that's another thing too, is that in light of Bernie Sanders supporters being so upset about the nomination process of Hillary Clinton, that there was a report earlier this week from Bloomberg. A lot of those people are taking good hard looks at third party candidates. They are, a lot of them are taking a look at the Green Party. They're taking a hard look at Jill Stein, who is their presidential nominee of the Green Party. There may be a lot of them that are taking a look at libertarians, even. I think that a lot of people over on our side of the aisle, people who do not want to vote for Donald Trump, are also going to be taking a hard look at libertarians, and also possibly the Constitution Party, because that's also a party that well, libertarians are getting talked about more, but the Constitution Party is one that really doesn't get talked about a whole lot. So Bernie Sanders supporters are, the Democrats are going to bend over backwards and turn themselves into pretzels to try to get those people on board with Hillary Clinton. And a lot of those people see in Hillary Clinton the same thing that conservatives and Republicans see in her. They see someone that is blatantly dishonest, who is dishonest to a fault. They see someone who has more than likely been a threat herself to national security. And incidentally, I saw a report on Newsmax earlier this morning that both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, starting next week, will be getting security briefings and foreign activity briefings, things of that nature, intelligence briefings next week. Given Hillary Clinton's track record, I got to say myself, is that really a good idea? It will be interesting to see if Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, in fact, are not done. Like I said, he says he has voicemails that he's going to release, and he also says that he has other emails that have not yet been released that would most likely get Hillary Clinton actually indicted. Whether or not there's some sort of double jeopardy on that, I don't know. But is he going to go ahead and is he going to leak all of these things out little by little by little over the course of the rest of the election cycle into November? Or is he going to save it all up for October and there's going to be some sort of October surprise? It's hard to say. But so the Democrats definitely have their work cut out for them in trying to bring on those disaffected Bernie Sanders supporters because they're hot. They're ticked off and they have every right to be. The system was rigged from the get-go. The whole primary nominating process for them was rigged from jump. And again, I think that Bernie Sanders was very gracious about it. I've also seen a report that within 24 hours of him making the announcement of nominating Hillary Clinton for president, that he has in fact left the Democrat Party. He wasn't really a part of it. He's an independent, but he would caucus with the Democrats, and from what I saw, that may be in jeopardy as well, that he won't even caucus with the Democrats. Now, whether or not as an independent member of the Senate that you are required to caucus with either Republicans or Democrats, I don't know. I'm not sure what the rules are. But the report that I saw is that he kind of doesn't want anything to do with the Democrat Party anymore. And, who could blame him? But I also have a report here. This is from Newsmax. And polls being what they are, and they are they can be obsolete an hour or two after the results of the poll have been taken. This was from Tuesday of this week. So again, this was before Hillary Clinton made her big speech and accepted the Democrat nomination for president. This is a Gallup poll that says that Hillary Clinton's unfavorable rating is at an all-time high. It says that Hillary Clinton is viewed unfavorably by 57% of Americans. That is an all-time worst in her political career and a precipitous drop from just 2 years ago. Again, this is according to a Gallup poll. Just 38% view Hillary Clinton favorably compared to 55% in 2014. Further, Clinton's image took a three-point dive in just 1 month, down from 41% favorable in June. Clinton's highest favorable ratings were at 67% in late 1998, which is interesting because if you think back, and anybody who heard former President Bill Clinton's speech the other night, how he kind of chronicled how he and Hillary met and kind of turned it into this big love story about how they met and got together and went through the whole him being Attorney General and then Governor in Arkansas and all the way on up to the White House. He left out a very important period of history, and 1998 would be that important period of history. In 1998, we were all introduced to a young intern named Monica Lewinsky. That's the part that he left out. And for anybody who is old enough to remember that when the impeachment process and the whole Lewinsky scandal broke, Hillary Clinton's ratings did take a huge uptick. She was portrayed as the victim, of course, that she was the cheated on wife, but she was standing by her man. And every time you saw Hillary Clinton, you thought that the next step for the mainstream media was going to be that they were going to start playing Tammy Wynette's "Stand by Your Man" behind pictures of Hillary Clinton. And so, yeah, her favorable ratings back in 1998 were huge because that's how she was portrayed at that time. She was the wronged wife. She was the cheated on wife. And that's why her numbers were where they were. But on the other side of that coin, it does give here other results. It says that goes on to say that Donald Trump's image is at 36% favorable, 59% unfavorable. That would be in the past 7 days. So that would have been from this past Tuesday, the 26th of July, back to the 19th. Well, that was also at the beginning of the Republican National Convention. And we have since learned, we hear about candidates after their respective conventions getting a bounce, getting a bump in their poll numbers. And Donald Trump got a 6-point convention bounce. That has not happened since 2000 with George W. Bush. Even Barack Obama, really, in 2008 and 2012, did not get a huge bump in the polls after the Democrat convention. This goes on to say that 71% of Democrats and left-leaning independents view Clinton favorably. Trump's favorability among Republicans improved to 72% during convention week. So there you go. There's that at the start of the convention week, his numbers went up steadily. Gallup also reported that the only comparable election between two highly unpopular candidates was 1992, and they listed Ross Perot and George H.W. Bush. The Gallup surveyed 3,545 Americans age 18 and older for this survey and for the poll, and the poll had a margin of error of plus or minus 3 points. So, those are the numbers. They are what they are. And those numbers in the next, how many months do we have here before the election? This is, let's say for all intents and purposes, this is August, September, October. We've got 3 months before the election, and these poll numbers are going to go back and forth so dramatically. Speaking of poll numbers, while we're talking about poll numbers, I have here, these are the weekly Real Clear Politics poll numbers, and they're interesting. The RCP poll average, as for anybody who knows, Real Clear Politics averages out. Oh my gosh, they must have 50 or 60 different polls. Everybody and their brother does a poll, and they have them all. They list them all, and the average of all of those polls is Hillary Clinton is at 44.7%, Donald Trump 45.5%. The spread here is Donald Trump by 0.9%. So the average here is basically showing that it's a dead heat, basically. excuse me. In some of the battleground states here, right now, today, in Pennsylvania, Hillary Clinton, 46.4%, Donald Trump, 42. She is up by 4.4. In Michigan, Clinton, 41. Trump, 35.8. She is up by 5.2. Ohio, 42.6 for Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump, 41.8. So that's interesting in a very key state like Ohio, that Hillary Clinton isn't even up by a whole percentage point. Also interesting in Florida, Hillary Clinton, 43.5, Donald Trump, 43.8. So Donald Trump is not even up by, in Florida, of all places, by a whole percentage point. Iowa, Hillary Clinton, 41.3, Donald Trump, 40.8. Wisconsin, 44.3, Trump, 38.7. That puts Hillary Clinton up by 5.6 percentage points. Wisconsin, I'm sorry, did I say, I'll say Wisconsin again just in case I didn't. Wisconsin, 44.3, Clinton, Trump, 38.7. She is up by 5.6. New Hampshire, Clinton, 43, Donald Trump, 39.3. She is up by 3.7. So there may be only, in only one of these polls, are these results out of the margin of error. So, and again, they are going to, they're going to go back and forth and roller coaster so dramatically that it's going to be it's going to be pretty interesting to see what happens. But moving on to some other things here, believe it or not, there were other things that went on this week besides the Democrat convention. But again, as I said at the top of the show, there was so much contrast between the week of the Republican convention and just this past week with the Democrats. And as I said at the top of the show, a group of speakers from this week's Democrat convention were mothers of young black men who had been killed by police officers. You had Trayvon Martin's mother. You had Michael Brown's mother. You had several other women on stage there. I believe there was only one spokesperson for the group. But one of the things that you didn't see was perhaps maybe some of the widows of police officers who have been killed in the line of duty this year. Perhaps what you didn't see is right here in the St. Louis area, the same week of the horrific shooting in Dallas of those five police officers, we had a shooting of our own here outside of St. Louis. The police officer in question was not killed, but he was very severely injured. I have sources who have told me, I cannot confirm this, but I do have sources that have told me that right now, today, again, I don't know anything more than what I'm telling you right here, that right now, today, we don't know if this is permanent or what the situation is, that right now, the officer in question who was shot here outside of St. Louis a few weeks ago is paralyzed, and he's paralyzed from the neck down. As best I can tell, his wife was not invited to speak at the DNC. And I have a report here. This is from the Washington Times. And it is by someone named Andrea Noble. Don't know if she's any relation, but, you know, it's got to be accurate, got to be right on, right? But she goes on to say that headline of this report from the Washington Times is that shooting deaths of police are up 78% this year. And this is a troubling statistic from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, and I would expect that it absolutely is. Again, this is the number of U.S. law enforcement officers shot dead on the job is up 78% this year compared with the same period last year. In the wake of targeted attacks on police officers this summer in Dallas and in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the analysis of law enforcement deaths across the country shows that the 32 firearms-related deaths recorded as of July 20 account for nearly half of the 67 in the line of duty deaths reported by police agency with ambushes. Ambushes, that is people actively lying in wait to kill police officers, comprises 14 of those fatal shootings. 14. The fatalities are still, however, the fatalities are still well below the rates of officer deaths in the 1970s, when the number of firearms-related fatalities peaked in 1973 with 156 officers. But Craig W. Floyd, president of the nonprofit Officers Memorial Fund, called the rapid uptick this year, quote, extremely troubling. And I would have to agree with him there. He also went on to say, and this I would agree with this, in the 1970s you had a lot of parallels to what we are facing now. There was a lot of anti-authority statement and a lot of anti-police sentiment. They did become targets just as they are becoming targets again today. Over the past decade, the number of officers fatally shot averaged 52 a year. Firearms-related deaths reached their lowest point since the 1880s in 2013, when only 33 officers were fatally shot. That is according to data from the Officers Memorial Fund. Advancement in police training and equipment, coupled with a lower crime rate in general, have helped bring down the number of in-line-of-duty deaths over the past several decades, Mr. Floyd said. But departments across the country have ordered police officers to patrol in pairs indefinitely. The New York Police Department announced this week that it had spent $7.5 million to purchase military-style protective equipment for its patrol officers. Now, I got to interrupt myself a minute because one of the gripes, if you will, coming from Democrats is the what's the word they like to use, the militarizing of our police forces. When you have stats, when you have statistics like this, and you have a sitting president and his administration, who I believe first of all gives winks and nods to those who are actively seeking to murder police officers. And I'm not going to say kill. I'm going to use the word murder. Let's call it what it is. We're not politically correct here at Conservative Cauldron Radio. Not only does he give it a wink and a nod, but I believe, and maybe, you know, maybe I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for saying this, but hey, it's what I think. I think that on some level, given Barack Obama's ideology, And we do know that he is in the dictionary, if you look up the word ideologue, his picture's there. He is a walking definition of ideologue. I think that on some level, he's comfortable with a number of police officers being shot. And I think he's comfortable with the reasons why they're being shot. A lot of these officers are being ambushed. They're being murdered for nothing more than the fact that either A, that they are police officers. That's it. They're wearing the uniform. They're wearing the badge. And a lot of times it's also racially motivated, as the case is in Dallas. We know that the man who shot all of these, fatally shot these five brave Dallas police officers, actually said that he was actively looking for white police officers to ambush, to murder. So there is a bit of a racial component in it as well. And again, I think this president on some level is comfortable with it. But going back to this report from the Washington Times, the gear is to be distributed to officers this year includes 20,000 ballistic helmets, 6,000 heavy-duty bulletproof vests that would be capable of protecting an officer from the type of firearm used by the man who opened fire on officers in Baton Rouge. This is from New York Police Commissioner Benjamin Bratton. As departments strive to improve officer safety, a particular concern to Mr. Floyd from the Officers Memorial Fund is the number of ambush attacks, and it should be extremely concerning to every American. According to previously reported data from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, the number of ambush-style killings has ranged from 5 in 2011 to 15 in 2014, with 6 such killings reported last year. Already this year, 14 ambush-style shootings have been reported. This is a frightening number of officers who have been assassinated because of the uniform they wear and the job that they do. And that is absolutely correct. These numbers should be disturbing to every single American. We should look at the substance rather than the shadows of the problem. This is from Jim Pasco, who is the executive director of the National Fraternal Order of Police. We've got to adjust the perception of what kind of people police officers are. And again, that goes back to, I believe it goes back to the president and his administration, who are all too eager to portray every single police officer as racist, that they get up that morning and they decide how many black people that they're going to shoot that day. And that is, it's a big part of the problem. President Obama this month hosted a marathon meeting with Black Lives Matter activists, civil rights leaders, police, and elected officials in an effort to brainstorm solutions. Participants were unable to reach much consensus. The president reported afterward that, quote, there are still deep divisions about how to solve these problems, unquote, of race, policing, and accusations of excessive force. The president also met with Attorney General Loretta Lynch and FBI Director James Comey to discuss ways to protect law enforcement officers. But again, you know, say what you will, but I'm not completely convinced that this is a problem that this president is eager to solve. We've got a lot more to get to before we call it a day here, and I'm going to try to get to as much of it as I can. I'm going to take a break. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Please do not go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Conservative Cauldron Radio.
Boy, man, I had a rough night's sleep. Boy, whew, I got a letter from the IRS yesterday, and I just couldn't sleep. Man, I'm dying here. Somebody help me.
IRS problems affect more than just your finances. If you're ready to take back control of your life and you owe more than $10,000, you need to call the Tax Doctor. Their expert staff can immediately protect you from the IRS and state collectors and get you the best possible tax settlement guaranteed. The IRS has recently released new programs geared in helping struggling taxpayers, where you may qualify to settle your tax debt and wipe out up to 85% or more of what you currently owe. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call the Tax Doctor right now. See if you qualify to pay less. 800-631-9123. 800-631-9123. 800-631-9123. Again, 800-631-9123.
You hear the headlines. You know health insurance is a real mess right now. Premiums have skyrocketed, and in most cases, you're stuck with your plan until open enrollment. But there's a government rule that allows you to qualify for lower health insurance rates if your life has changed. That means if you've changed jobs, if you're having a child, if you're getting married, if you're getting divorced, even if you run a small business or you're self-employed, this law may qualify you to get lower health insurance rates. Call the Health Insurance Hotline today. Learn how this 10-minute call can help you get lower health insurance rates. This is a free service to help consumers learn the laws to help them qualify for lower health insurance rates. So call right now to learn more. 800-926-4501. 800-926-4501. 800-926-4501. 800-926-4501.
Hi there, I'm Slammin' Sam Myers, and I would like to invite you to listen to fun, exciting oldies, The Fox. It's an internet radio station that is like nothing else you've ever heard before. Most classic hit stations have a music library of 500 or maybe 1,000 songs. The Fox Oldies has several thousand. We play songs that radio has forgotten. My favorite thing to hear is I haven't heard that song in years. You'll hear music from the 50s like Elvis Presley, and every once in a while, a current song that adults enjoy like Uptown Funk. It's real heavy on the music from 1970 to 1981. Tune in to www.thefoxoldies.com. Tune in, and I promise you, you're going to hear something within an hour that you have not heard in a very, very long time. That's what the Fox Oldies specializes in. It's music that will put a smile on your face. And music that does not have to be censored. It's fun, exciting oldies. The Fox at www.thefoxoldies.com.
Attention business owners. We know that owning a business means getting things done right now. So if your right now list includes a new building, call the Right Now Company. General Steel. We can design a building for your business quickly and save you thousands of dollars. That's right, thousands. You may think General Steel only builds large projects or that you can't afford General Steel quality. Well, check these prices. How about a 40 by 60 foot building for under $22,000? Or even a 50 by 100 for under $35,000? That's right, a 5,000 square foot building for under $35,000. And these buildings all have General Steel quality. Best of all, you can still order a building and have it delivered in time to build this year. How's that for right now? So if your right now list includes a new building, call the right now company, General Steel.
800-398-8309, 800-398-8309, 800-398-8309. That's 800-398-8309.
We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble, TGIF. Everyone, thank you for hanging out with me today. Very quickly, before we have to get out of here, of course, all charges against the all six of the police officers charged in the Freddie Gray case in Baltimore have been dropped. No word yet on what is going to take place with Prosecutor Marilyn Mosby. I think it's pretty obvious at this point that she had a personal agenda here, and I don't know. Something needs to happen because I don't know if these six police officers are going to be able to return to their job or not. And that's not cool when you ruin people's lives for your own agenda. But also, before I get out of here today, I'm going to do a little something new here. You know, a lot of people say to me that I should talk a little bit more about paganism and about being a witch here on Conservative Cauldron Radio. And my first reaction was, I'm not trying to shove my faith down people's throats. But at the same time, I want to educate people about paganism and about Wicca and about just exactly what it is that I say I am when I say that I'm a witch. And one of the things that I want to talk about here very quickly before you have to get out of here is that this coming Monday on October 1st is a holiday called Lunasad, or more easy to pronounce, easier to spell. It's a holiday called Lammas, and basically what it is it is the first of three harvest festivals that take place on the pagan calendar, on the Wiccan calendar. The second one being the autumnal equinox in September, and the third one being Halloween. And basically what this is, Lammas is from the Anglo-Saxon word meaning loaf mass, and it the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle of 921 CE mentions it as, quote, the Feast of First Fruits, as does the Red Book of Derby. Not sure what that is. If I find out, I'll let you know. It was a popular ceremony during the Middle Ages, but died out after the Reformation, though the custom is being revived in many places. It marks the first harvest, when the first grain is gathered in, ground in a mill, and baked into a loaf. This first loaf was offered up as part of the Christian Eucharist ritual. So basically what it is like I said, it is the first of three harvest festivals. And it is a celebration of the first harvest, of the first like I was saying, the first grains to be harvested, the first fruits and vegetables to be harvested out of your garden, farmers, what have you, and we celebrate that. We celebrate the harvest, and the harvest comes in many different forms. You can harvest dreams for yourself. You can harvest your goals. You can harvest. Think of it along those lines. There are many things personally in your life that you can celebrate on this first harvest of Lammas. So to all of my Wiccan pagan friends, happy Lammas on Monday. That, I am out of here. Please go to politichicks.com. Going to have something new up there soon, very shortly. conservativecauldron.blogspot.com, facebook.com/BeckyNoble, and on Twitter @PatriotWitch. Everyone have a fantastic weekend. Again, happy Lammas to all of my Wiccan pagan brothers and sisters. Have a great weekend. I will see you next time.